and welcome to The Chirp. I'm Andrew Michaud, and today I'm here with someone who is a horticulturist and doctor of geology, and a mentor of mine from my geology days. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Charlie Kerwin, doctor of geology, as you said, earth science, and I'm also a horticulturist and an arborist.
All right, Charlie, when did your interest in the sciences start?
Oh, I've always had an interest in the science. My father was a microbiologist, and my mother was an anesthesiologist, so we're kind of a sciencey family.
Oh, okay. Why not go into one of those fields?
Well, that would be a good question. Something my parents asked me on, and there are a lot of reasons, but I was more of an earth scientist than I was a people scientist.
Very fair, very fair. So I see you started with an AAS degree in horticulture technology from the Thompson School.
That's right.
Why start there?
They had a really good program that was geared towards people who wanted to do forestry and horticulture things, but it was designed to be very intense. They were two-year programs, and really meant just to get people right out into the field with a good base of knowledge.
Oh, excellent. Is that straight out into the field work, kind of what drew you there?
Oh, yeah. So it was everything was practical, and pretty much everybody got hired before they graduated.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So what did you do with your horticulture degree?
I actually started a tree business. Oh, nice. Could have gone into landscaping, but I got involved with the very start of what became their urban forestry program. And so we were sort of the beta run of it, and we got into hand climbing and doing tree work. And so that's what I ended up getting into when I got out, was doing tree work instead of landscaping.
Very cool. So do you still, if I'm not mistaken, you do still do that, correct?
I do.
Very cool.
I don't climb anymore.
Ah, okay.
I'm a little old. I mean, I still do for fun, but I don't do it for a living. I'm too old.
Fair enough. Can't blame me on that.
Yeah.
So 10 years after your horticulture degree, you came to Keene for a BS in geology.
Yes.
What drew you to geology in particular?
Well, I had just done a lot of traveling, and I just lived in Central America for over a year. And I just moved back, and I closed my tree business, and I decided to go and retrain. So I came here, because it's close to where I'm from, and talked to Jane Warner, who worked in the office over there. And I told her that I wanted to retrain. She goes, "Well, what do you like?" So I told her about some of the things I've been doing, and this is no joke. She literally just turned around, opened up a file cabinet, threw down a piece of paper which had all the geology stuff on it, and said, "You want to do this?" And she slid it at me, and I looked at it, and I said, "I think that might be right."
That sounds like how Carol got me, actually.
Yeah, that was pretty much how it happened.
Very cool. Why continue education in geology all the way from a BS to a master's to a doctorate?
Well, there were a couple of reasons. One was my father and my mother had always wanted me to get a PhD. And so that was part of it. But then when I left here and went to do my master's, I kind of had it, you know, with school. I'm really an outside person. It was a lot of inside studying and stuff, and I loved it. But I was just wrapping up my master's thesis, and three of my committee came in and sat down and said, "So what are your plans?" I said, "Well, you know, I think I'm going to finish this and get a job." And all three of them smiled and said, "No, you're not. You're going to get your PhD." And I said, "You didn't let me finish." I said, "I'm going to go get my PhD." So they just kept me going.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did you know when you started the geology degree that you were going to go all the way to doctorate?
Not really. I kind of thought I would. Like, it was sort of in the back of my mind. But, you know, you start a four-year degree. When you get started, you think 4 years is going to take forever, right? And it doesn't. So next thing you know, that's over, and then I'm doing the master's, and that took another 4 years. And so at that point, I'm closer to the end than I am to the beginning. So, but I don't think I was really gunning to do it because I didn't really know what geology was all about when I started. So I guess the answer is no.
Fair enough. Interesting.
Yeah.
So you were part of the USGS State Map program.
Yes.
So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was actually part of the USGS EdMap program and the State Map program. So those are programs where the USGS uses federal funds to partially fund or mostly fund people who are mapping. So in the EdMap program, it's the school doesn't split money. What they do is they split in kind. So when I did it, the EdMap program, my committee members had to agree to put in a certain amount of hours mentoring me in lieu of pay. So there's a matching thing going on in terms of the funds. But they use it as a program to do mapping, and they do bedrock maps and surficial. I was a bedrock mapper, and because otherwise states wouldn't be able to afford to do it on their own.
Okay.
So that the EdMap program really got me funded through my master's and my PhD, and then later when I graduated, they kept me on through the state with the State Map program, but a lot of those funds have been cut. So I think I just talked to the state geologist the other day, and he's thinking they're going to keep mapping, but they're really pushing surficial because they have to justify it somehow. So the bedrock mapping was to actually find bedrock fractures that they could tie into aquifers, so it had to do with water. And so similar with the surficial stuff, that's to look for stratified aquifers and stuff like that. So it's all about water right now.
Okay. Do you know why the state thinks surficial is more valuable information than the hard rock stuff?
You know, I don't really know why it's gone that way. There's a lot more surficial maps out there that they've done of the state than there are bedrock maps. And I thought they were pushing to complete the bedrock mapping of the state. But, you know, a few years ago, they just basically said, well, our funds are limited, so we're going to do it in-house. And I don't know everybody over there anymore, but I don't know if they have any hard rock mappers in there anymore.
Okay. So in 2002, you came back to Keene as an adjunct professor.
Yes.
So what made you want to return and teach?
I wanted to teach people how to map. I wanted to teach people about geology. I was really turned on by it, and Keene was here, and so, you know, Dr. Nielsen and Dr. Bill, they were looking for some help, and I fit right in. So, and it was close to home, so it fit two bills.
Oh, okay. So, as we're talking about maps and mapping, can you tell people a little bit about what that's like? How do you actually make a map? What things you consider?
Sure. So, basically what it is, it's boots in the sand exploration. So you're going out. Usually you have a topographic map as a base, which just tells you where the hills are and how steep they are. And so in this part of the world, because it's been so glaciated, you know that certain sides of the hills, because of the way the glaciers do their thing, are steeper and show more bedrock than the other sides of the hills. So you're looking for specific locations, and you're basically just taking a GPS, a compass, and a map, and heading out into the woods and spending every day just looking for rock. And so once you find it, there's a bunch of things you have to do. You have to put your GPS coordinates on the topo sheet where you are, and you have to describe the rock right down to the mineralogy and the weathering color, maybe even identify what formation it might be. And then so a lot of these rocks were flat-lying sediments before they became what they are today. and they've been all folded and rumpled and flipped over and crunched and faulted and intruded and all kinds of things. So there's usually a whole story that has to be told. You know, what's the attitude? What are they, horizontal? Are they tilted up? And any faults that have happened and anything you can say about them, you write in your notes. And then you go home and you put all that on basically a geology map. And that can be two ways. We've done both paper versions of those maps, which later they digitize, or I was doing digital maps, which are much easier for them. The last two maps I did for them were paper maps because I didn't have the software to do it, and it was expensive to set it up. And so they said they were going to digitize it, but all they really did was digitize the polygons, and there's really nothing but the formation name and where they are on those maps. So a lot of the information isn't there yet, and it's a huge job. So, yeah, and then you go through maybe a couple of iterations where they're kind of like, well, this doesn't jive well with the quad next to it, so there's more than one person usually out there mapping, and if someone's mapping an adjacent quad, we would try to get together and map along the edge of both quads so at least they agreed. And so there's a little bit of slop, but not much. I mean, you have to connect the dots because you have about 10% coverage exposure. So you have an outcrop over here and an outcrop over there and an outcrop over there, and you have to kind of figure out what's going on and draw the lines or the dashed lines or whatever. And so it's actually a lot of work. It's really fun to do, and it's really interesting.
Awesome. Jumping back a little bit, could you, for the viewer's sake, talk a little bit about what a quad is?
So the world is divided up by latitude and longitude lines. So the latitude lines are the ones that go north and south like a ladder, and the longitude lines go all the way around and divide the Earth into halves. So the quadrangle, so it's the latitude-longitude lines are divided up by degrees and minutes and seconds. So it's 60 minutes equals a degree and 60 seconds equals a minute. And so the quadrangles that I mapped were 7.5 minute long by 7.5 minute wide. So they're called 7.5 minute quadrangles.
All right. Yeah. And minute not being the unit of time, but a unit of measurement on the map.
Yeah, it's kind of related to time in a way because, you know, the longitude lines are related to time in terms of when sunrise is and stuff like that, but it is done minutes and seconds. So, yeah, it's not time.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I never actually made the connection there.
Yeah.
Well, today I learned.
You learned your new thing. Now you can go to bed.
That's right. I can go. Good night, everybody. So, as we were just saying, map making involves a lot of field work.
Yeah.
What's one of your favorite experiences you've had out in the field?
Oh, you know, God, it's just, I loved all of it. I've had some beautiful days out there with some beautiful views. And the thing is, the way that I map is I don't take trails, if there are any, because the trails take the easiest route, and that's never where the outcrop is. So I'm pretty sure that I've seen things that people haven't looked at, you know, maybe in 100 years or so.
And oh, wow.
So I would find all kinds of cemeteries out in the woods and some amazing cliffs and views. And some of it was frustrating because I would go through some logging slash, and that was really hard to do. And I got chased by coyotes, and, you know, there was and eaten by bugs. And so there's a bad side too, but overall, it was really a great experience. And if you were to ask me to say one day, you know, what was my favorite experience, I just could never pin it down. The whole thing was great. I loved doing it.
I don't think I'd be doing my job if I didn't ask you to elaborate on the coyotes.
Well, so I think I was in Candia, in the Candia Quad, and I was pretty remote, and I was doing a bunch of small hills. And so I was at the top of this one hill, And I did all my geology stuff. So I carry everything in a backpack with a water, you know, a camel bag and water. And I have a hammer and my all my field note stuff and my rock testing points and all kinds of stuff that I use. And so it was around noon and I decided to eat lunch. So I pull out my sandwich and I'm sitting there at the top of this hill, and it was kind of covered with pine trees, and it was a really nice day. And I could see and sense that there was something circling the top of the hill, taking peeks of me and popping out of sight. So I could hear it. I didn't actually see it, but I knew it was a coyote. And I thought, well, you know, it probably smells my lunch, so whatever. I packed up my stuff and I went down through this ravine and up to the next top of the hill. So, and there was a lot more rock out there. So I'm spread out all over the place doing my geology thing. And I could see down through the trees into what looked like a field that had overgrown. So it was a field, but it had trees in it. And at the other end of the field, all of a sudden, after I got my backpack all put back and I was ready to dive off the backside of this cliff and head out, I hear a pack of coyotes howling.
Oh, geez.
So I'm just standing at the top of this hill thinking, well, okay, that's interesting. And usually they howl because, you know, when they yip and sing and make carry-ons, because there's a kill and they're all doing the happy dance. So I wasn't too worried about it. But then, so I'm standing there. I have my backpack, which is full of rock, and it's heavy. And I have my 3-pound crack hammer that I used to. So I got that in my hand because I don't have anything like a weapon or anything. I just have this hammer. And then they all stop making their noise, and they start charging across this field. And I could hear them kind of going as they were running. And I could see them, the trees getting knocked to the side. And and they were coming right at me. So I'm just like, all right, let's go. I had my hammer. I'm like, I'm just going to hit one, and maybe they'll eat the dead one or whatever. I had no idea what was going on.
Oh, man.
But I'll admit that I was a little spooked. And so they came right up to the hill and stopped. Dead silence. Like, I'm standing there ready, and just nothing. And I'm like, okay, that's worse. Like, now what are they doing, skulking around? At least I knew where they were when they were charging at me.
Right, yeah.
So I waited for a few minutes, and then there was sort of a small cliff right behind me, and it's really narrow channel, but it was a nice flat runway. So I jumped down into there and took off. And I was talking to Fish and Game about it, and they said that the coyote stopped because their expectation is that I was going to run. And so they chase things and they hindquarter them. That's how they take them down. And because I didn't do that, it confused them. They're like, they didn't know what was going on because I didn't do what they expected me to. And his thought was, if I had run, it would have gotten ugly. So.
Oh, man.
I did start carrying a knife after that.
That sounds like a good idea.
Wow. But yeah, I would see a lot of wildlife. I would see a lot of moose. I saw a lot of bobcats. I saw tons of bears. I saw a lot of birds, you know, quails doing the injured wing thing, you know, because I was too close to the nest. And so a lot of fox and beaver and just, you know, you're really out in the middle of nowhere. And even though New Hampshire is pretty populated, there are pockets where you get the sense that some of these animals live their whole life and have no idea that there's humans on the planet. It's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yep.
So you're one of the last few geologists at Keene State.
Yep.
Or at least the last hard rock geologist,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah, that's definitely true.
So the school has recently revived the subject as a minor after the major was cut.
Well, so after they cut the major, I got picked up by geography and environmental studies. And what we did was we redesigned what was the geology minor as a geoscience minor. Because there were a lot of students that were really wanting to do it. And so we got the approval. It's on the books. But at this point, I don't know. There's so much transition, I don't know how that's going to survive. But we do have a geoscience minor, which is not anything like the major.
Right. What do you think the future for Keene State Earth Sciences and Geology looks like, given that?
Well, I'll be quite frank. I think it's dead. I don't think the college has any interest in keeping any earth science here, and my personal opinion is that they're it seems as though they're going after all the natural sciences. So geography disappeared this summer. Physics is on the chopping block. So they're really looking at it from a financial standpoint. So a lot of these hardcore science programs are difficult. So they're usually smaller programs. And the smaller programs don't have what they consider to be the right teacher-student ratio. So they want lots of students, one teacher. So they're not paying a lot of money for all the students. But a lot of the students in my history here picked Keene State because of the small classes and a beautiful campus, obviously, and the fact that they came here. Many students don't know what they want to do when they get here. And so being sort of a broad-based liberal arts college, they can kind of hunt and peck around for a little bit till they decide, right? So we all, a lot of people did that.
That's actually what happened to me.
Yeah.
So I came here for communications to begin with.
And oh, yeah,
I
you did.
Carol Ledger's class.
Yeah.
And I talked to her one day after class, and she ferried me down the hallway to the doctor.
Right. Here goes my mic. Sorry in there. I'll hold it. So I think what they're trying to do is become more of a niche school or a certificate school. And I think, you know, my personal opinion is that the majority of students that I've interacted with over the last 20-something years have all picked the school for the fact that there was so broad of a thing they could go into and get exposed to. And you can tell I'm a little upset about it, but
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
To be honest, I wasn't very happy about it either when I first heard about that.
Right.
As we come to a close here, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, not that I can think of. I think that I would love to see some kind of geoscience program revitalize itself here in one way or another. I don't think it's going to happen, but I sure think it would be a good idea for the school to reconsider its direction, but that's just me being an old fart that doesn't like to see major change sometimes, you know how it is.
Sometimes we need old farts telling us that stuff.
Well, sometimes, you know, and sometimes change is good, so we don't really know what the plan is, and maybe the plan will work out better. We have no idea, so.
That's true.
That's that.
That's true. Final question.
Yep.
Do you have any advice for people interested in geology and earth sciences but don't know where to start?
Yes. So if you're interested in it, you kind of have to start in an intro class. So take a good intro geology class that introduces you to minerals and rocks. And it's good if you start in a school where you have a program that you can go into. And if you're really serious about it before you go, take a look at whatever school it is, the website, and see who the teachers are and see what their specialties were and if it's anything at all that you might be interested in. It's also a good idea to get on the web and job hunt and see what jobs are being offered, because that fluctuates also. For a while, the hydrology jobs were just crazy. Everybody was going for a hydro degree. And now the market's saturated, so that's not as good anymore right now. They're really looking for people with GIS experience. Every job listing I see wants GIS. And they also they'd like you to have some sort of geology background. Even if you're an engineer, they like that. So if you're going to do it, do a little research. Pick a good school. There are some really good ones out there. UMass Amherst, UMass Lowell. UNH has still sort of a program going. But you kind of have to leave New Hampshire to get a geology degree. And there are some really excellent geology schools still out there.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for stopping by.
It's been a pleasure
as always.
Yeah, this was fun.
Excellent. I'm glad you think so.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you for listening to The Chirp. Music provided by composer Nathaniel Bridges. See you next time.